All right, welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 224. This episode is titled, Whither Are We Traveling? And we took that title from the book, Whither Are We Traveling? By Dwight L. Smith, a past grandmaster, and the book was written back in 1963. The reason for this week's focus on that book is, over the last, I'd say, month or so, I've actually received several emails about people who have said to me, have you read Whither Are We Traveling? Have you done this? Have you read this? Have you looked at it? Have you examined this book? Have you talked about this book? And we really haven't. So I'd like to focus a little bit on that this week. So that is the premise of this week's show. In addition to that, I just wanted to wish everybody a happy holiday season. It's in full swing. So whether you're celebrating Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, or any other of the festive high holidays for this time of year, please know that you have my best wishes for the season. And because of the season, I usually do go dark for 2 weeks each year for this show, so you get 50 episodes of this show every year. This year, we will not have a show for 2 weeks in a row, and the two dates that we will not have shows consecutively will be on the 27th, so right after Christmas, we will not have a show, and I will not have a show on the 3rd of January 2016. We will be back again on the 10th of January 2016. So as of right now, this episode is being released on December 13th. There will be an episode released on December 20th. The Masonic Roundtable will be live again on December 22nd, most likely on the 29th, and again on the 5th. So I don't think we'll be missing anything on the Roundtable, but this show in particular will be dark, as we say, on the 27th and the 3rd. So, without any further ado, I would like to read Chapter 1 of Whither Are We Traveling? Whither Are We Traveling? By Dwight L. Smith, Past Grand Master. Chapter 1, Whither Are We Traveling? The Wailing Wall is crowded these days. Masonic leaders, great and small, are lined up, each awaiting his turn to lift his voice in lamentation. The figures show a falling off of membership. Attendance at lodge meetings is not what it used to be. The thing to do is to adopt this project or that gimmick, and then all will be well. As might expected, the projects and gimmicks are about as impossible as they are ridiculous. For several years, the bosom beating has been going on, firing with a shotgun rather than a rifle. Our leadership has offered little of constructive nature. Prescriptions, for the most part, have consisted merely of sales talk for whatever pet scheme was being proposed. Only a few voices in the wilderness have made a mature and realistic appraisal. Part 1. A faulty diagnosis. At the outset, I may as well precipitate an argument by disposing of the old favorites. 1. Whatever attendance troubles our lodges may be having are not caused by television, nor the automobile, nor by bowling, nor togetherness, nor any other of busyness in which our restless society is engaged. A multitude of activities may contribute to a decline in lodge attendance, but they do not constitute the cause. When we complain of a lack of attendance, what we really are saying is that interest is at a low ebb. For in any organization, if there is interest, there will be attendance. No amount of television or bowling or endless busyness can usurp the position of eminence a lodge of Freemasons occupies in a man's loyalty if the lodge is in a position to command his loyalty. The ailment isn't quite that simple. We are looking at the symptoms, not the disease. The real source of the trouble is within ourselves. 2. Such problems as we may have will not be solved by forcing men to memorize a set of questions and answers, nor by cramming books and lectures down their throats, nor by any Big Brother plan, nor by devoting our energies and resources to other organizations, movements, however worthy they may be. The cure isn't that simple either. The patient's indisposition will not be relieved by nostrums. The treatment, too, must come from within. Part 2. Basic premises. Next, may I offer what I consider to be 3 basic premises. Then we shall get down to the cases. First, the history of Freemasonry is one of ups and downs. If this brief period is one of the downs, it is nothing compared to some of the crises, through which our fraternity has passed. Second, in our membership decline, we again see history repeating itself. It simply is a case of our sins catching up with us. We had a decade in which there was a membership influx that was both unhealthy and unhappy. We ran a production line. We counted new members by the hundreds of thousands, but we could count new Masons only by the score. Now comes the payoff. Third, whatever is wrong with lodge attendance in 1962 was wrong 25 years ago when I was master of my lodge. I doubt seriously whether lodge attendance has ever been, quote-unquote, what it used to be. I had to work my head off to sustain interest in 1937. Sometimes I succeeded, sometimes I didn't. The situation is no different today. Tomorrow and the day after, it will be the same. I repeat, we have only to look at ourselves to discover the cause for whatever unhappy days have come upon us. Our troubles are of our own making. Such corrective measures as we must go beyond the surface, they must go to the roots of the problem or be of no avail. Then let's take an honest look at some of the conditions within our own house which may be contributing to a membership decline and a tapering off of interest. Part 3. Self-examination. 1. Let's face it. Can we expect Freemasonry to retain its past glory and prestige unless the level of leadership is raised above its present position? On many an occasion in the past 14 years, masters and secretaries have come into my office to ask my advice on what to do about lagging interest. Again and again, I have said, there is nothing wrong with your lodge nor with Freemasonry that good leadership will not cure. I believe that. 2. How well are we guarding the West Gate? Again, let's face it, we are permitting too many to pass who can pay the fee and little else. On every hand, I hear the same whispered complaint. We used to be getting petitions for the degrees from the good, substantial leaders in the community. Now we are getting whatever. Just what it is they are getting. You know as well as I. 3. Has Freemasonry become too easy to obtain? Fees for the degrees are ridiculously low. Annual dues are far too low. Everything is geared to speed, getting through as fast as possible and on to something else. The lodge demands little and gets little. It expects loyalty but does almost nothing to put a claim on that man's loyalty. When we ourselves place a cheap value on Masonic membership, how can we expect petitioners and new members to prize it? 4. Are we not worshiping at the altar of bigness? Look it in the face. Too few lodges, with those lodges we do have, much too large. Instead of devoting our thoughts and energies to ways whereby a new Master Mason may find a sphere of activity within his lodge, we let him get lost in the shuffle. Then we nag and argue with him because he does not come to meetings to wander around with nothing to do. We are hard at work to make each lodge so large that it becomes an impersonal aggregation of strangers, a closed corporation. 5. What can we expect when we have permitted Freemasonry to become subdivided into a score of organizations? Look at it. Each organization dependent upon the parent body for its existence, yet each jockeying for a position of supremacy, and each claiming to be the pinnacle to which any Master Mason may aspire. We have spread ourselves thin, and ancient craft masonry is the loser. Downgraded, the symbolic lodge is used only as a springboard, a short-sighted craft we have been to create in our fraternity a condition wherein the tail can and may wag the dog. 6. Has the American passion for bigness and efficiency dulled the spirit of Masonic charity? The box of fraternal assistance, which once occupied the central position in every lodge room, has been replaced by an annual per capita tax. That benevolence, which for ages was one of the sweetest byproducts of the teaching of our gentle craft, has, I fear, ceased to be a gift from the heart and has become a writing of a check. And unless the personal element is there, charity becomes as sounding brass and tinkling cymbal. 7. Do we pay enough attention to the festive board? Should any reader have to ask what the festive board is? That in itself will serve to show how far we have strayed from the traditional path of Freemasonry. Certainly, the festive board is not the wolfing of ham sandwiches, pie, and coffee at the conclusion of a degree. It is the hour of refreshment in all its beauty and dignity, an occasion for inspiration and fellowship, a time when the noble old traditions of the craft are preserved. 8. What has become of that course of moral instruction, veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols, that Freemasonry is supposed to be? If it is a course of instruction, then there should be teachers, and if ours is progressive science, then the teaching of a Master Mason should not end when he is raised. I am not talking about dry professional lectures or sermons. Heavens no. That is the kind of thing that makes Masonic education anathema. Where are the parables and allegories? Alas, they have descended into booklets and stunts. No wonder interest is so hard to sustain. 9. Hasn't the so-called century of the common man contributed to making our fraternity a little too common? We cannot expect to retain prestige the craft has enjoyed in the past if we continue without challenge to permit the standards of the picnic ground, the bowling alley, the private club, and the golf links to be brought into the lodge hall. Whether we like it or not, a general lowering of standards has left its mark on every lodge in Indiana, large and small. 10. Are there not too many well-meaning brethren who are working overtime to make Freemasonry something other than Freemasonry? It was an unhappy day when some eager beaver conceived the idea that our craft should adopt the methods of a service club, or the luncheon group, or the civic league, or the playboy outfit. Whoever the eager beaver was, he lost sight of the fact that one of the reasons our fraternity is prized so highly is that it does not operate like other organizations. Well, that should be enough for one dose. The following pages elaborate on the 10 points enumerated above. Let me give you a fair warning. Some of my readers are not going to like it, but what I have to say, I believe our craft needs to hear, and it is only for the good of the order that it is said. I shall propose no bright ideas, not one. All I am going to advocate is that Freemasonry remain Freemasonry, and if we have strayed from the traditional path, we had better be moving back to the main line while there is yet time to restore the prestige and respect, the interest and loyalty and devotion that once was ours. So that's the paper. I hope you guys enjoyed it. That's the chapter one in Whither Are We Traveling by the past Grand Master of Indiana. I think in 1962, it is pretty interesting that they were struggling with the same things we are struggling with today. And in fact, the 40 years since this book has been written, he says in the paper that I don't think that attendance has ever been, quote unquote, what it used to be. And that's certainly true. I dare you to go look inside your minutes book and look at all the signatures. Count them up. See what you got on average. What's interesting is, in my home lodge, a past master of my lodge actually pulled the book and showed me. We've always had, my lodge has 317 members. Now, looking at the minutes book, the percentage has always been super low. We're talking about between 13 and 24 members per meeting, flat out. It's rarely higher than that, and it can be lower than that. So, just something to think about in the future when we're trying to do all the things that we need to do to bring attendance back and be relevant and offer things that men are looking for. If Masonry can bring those things together through fellowship while still coming and giving the generation what they want, which is education and the philosophy, again, something that Peace talked about, then we will get that interest. You have to invest in them, and they will in turn invest in you. And I think that's one of the things that this past Grandmaster was trying to say. Now, if there is sustained interest in this, I certainly will offer to finish the book in the show. We can do a chapter a week. Let me know what you think. Just toss a note up on the Facebook page. Send me an email at wcypodcast@gmail.com or at admin@wcypodcast.com. Either one works. Or again, tweet me, whatever. We'll figure it out and we'll see what the consensus is. So next week, we're going to be talking with Frater O about the second degree. We meant to get that in shortly after we did the first degree talk, but things got a little crazy. The holidays have been going nuts. I'm attending pancake breakfasts with Santa every weekend, so it's a fun time. Lodge is raising a little bit of capital to make those building repairs and such. So make sure you're supporting your lodges, putting a little bit extra in the kitty for them so that the lodge can make the repairs it needs to make to sustain the building, because I'm sure you'd want to see that building be around for a long time. With that, we're going to go into this week's famous Freemason, and then we'll wrap it up. This week's famous Freemason is James Mitchell Ashley, born November 14th, 1824, passed away September 16th, 1896, was a U.S. Congressman, territorial governor of Montana, and railroad president. Ashley was born in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, to John and Mary Ashley. He married Emma Jane Smith in 1851, and together they had four children. He is the great-grandfather of U.S. Representative Thomas W. L. Ashley, a number of other descendants, including James Ashley IV, a portraitist living in Chicago. James IV recently completed a portrait of his great-grandfather, which will soon be permanently installed at the University of Toledo Law School. Ashley was most self-taught in elementary subjects. His early employment included clerking on Ohio and Mississippi riverboats. In 1848, he settled in Portsmouth, Ohio, where he became an editor of the Portsmouth Democrat. In 1849, he was admitted to the Ohio bar, but did not practice. About this time, he moved to Toledo, Ohio, and became involved in the wholesale drug business. James Ashley was an active abolitionist who traveled with John Brown's widow on the date of Brown's execution and reported the event in the still extant local newspaper, the Toledo Blade. In 1858, he was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives of the 36th United States Congress as a Republican. While in Congress, the 37th through the 40th, he served as the chairman of the Committee on Territories and was instrumental on the creation, naming, and borders of the territories of Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, and Washington. He also took an active role in supporting the recruitment of troops for the Union Army during the American Civil War. During his term, he wrote a bill to abolish slavery in the District of Columbia, introduced the first bill for a constitutional amendment abolishing slavery, and initiated impeachment proceedings against President Andrew Johnson, 1867. He was defeated for re-election in 1868. During the Civil War, he authored the Arizona Organic Act. Ashley was the House Majority Floor Managing for the passage of the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution in the House of Representatives, which he succeeded in passing by a margin of 2 votes on January 31st, 1865. Following his defeat, Ashley was appointed the territorial governor of Montana and served until 1870. He then returned to Toledo. Ashley was the builder and president of the Ann Arbor Railroad. In early 2010, Ashley was proposed by the Ohio Historical Society as a finalist in a statewide vote for inclusion in a statuary hall at the United States Capitol. Ashley died on September 16, 1896 in Ann Arbor, Washtenaw County, Michigan, United States, and was interred in Woodlawn Cemetery, Toledo, Lucas County, Ohio, USA. An interesting note is that Ashley is actually played by an actor, David Constable, in 2012 Steven Spielberg's movie Lincoln. James Mitchell was raised in 1853 in Toledo Lodge number 144, Toledo, Ohio. That's it for this week. Please remember to find us on Facebook, follow on Twitter at WentzKMU. Please support the show by visiting either the links for Support the Show or the limited edition store where you can buy a pin or cufflinks or any number of other things. Check out the links in the Support the Show page where there are links to various places to do a little bit of shopping where you can use the coupon code WCY at checkout and you will get a 10% discount, as well as those establishments will send a little bit back to our show to keep the lights on. And please don't forget to check out the Midnight Freemasons 3 times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, with all new content. Always cool stuff there. And also, don't forget about the Masonic Roundtable, 10, 9 Central, Tuesday nights, live. You can tweet us while we are broadcasting. We love the interaction during the show. The 100th episode is going to be in January toward the beginning of the month, and you're not going to want to miss that. So with that, I hope you guys all have a phenomenal week. I'll be back here next week with Frater O, and after that, we'll take a 2-week break, and we'll be back at the beginning of 2016. Can't believe we're saying that. 2016, guys. Pretty amazing. Or as we say in Masonry, 6016. So, again, have a great week. Stay on the level. The Wentz Gaming. I'm Robert Johnson.